Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Dean Baker, head of the major think tank in Washington, leading economist.
Yeah, he established the Center for Economic Policy and Research in Washington, D.C.
And he's co-director of it, and we have him back again today. He's the economist, or one of the economists, that best predicted the housing bubble. He's written extensively on how bubbles build up in our economy. He's written about the depth of misunderstanding I think one of the major points I took away from reading him was that the system is structured to give the 1% the money. So the debate about how much taxes they pay is kind of secondary to the fact that the system is funneling the money up and not around to the rest of the American people.
And it's a debate between, let's call it popular journalism and as far as I'm concerned, reality. And we also want to direct you to Dean Baker's web's many articles that you can find on the internet for clarification on anything that we bring up in the next 15 minutes.
It's all on the Center for Economic and Policy Research website.
Okay. I'm going to read a quote from that website. And anyway, good morning, Dr. Baker.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I've got to make sure that he's over there. We could be talking to him. By the way, where are you right now? Where are we talking to you at?
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. I've heard of that place. Here's a quote from your website. Progressives need a new approach to politics. They have been losing not just because conservatives have more money and power, but also because they have accepted the conservatives' framing of the debate. All right, and you wrote a book called The End of Loser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive. And by the way, that's available for free download, which is kind of interesting. Okay, so tell us, loser liberals, what we're doing wrong here.
Well, most of public debate, certainly here in Washington, it's focused on the idea that conservatives want to leave things to the market. They trust market outcomes.
Right.
On the other hand, liberals, progressives, whatever term you want to use, want to have the government intervene to help people who didn't do well. So that's my losers. The losers are the people who didn't do well.
Okay.
They want to tax the winners to help the losers. And my point is, people are doing badly. They do need to be helped. But the reason they're doing badly isn't that they lost. It's that the game was rigged. And if we just focus on tax and transfer, we're going to tax the rich a little more, and we're going to get a few dollars in taxes. We've lost the game. We're playing their game. Because the whole point was they rigged the deck. We just let them rig the deck to shift all the money to the 1%, and then we're going to fight for a few crumbs, and maybe we'll get a little bit here and there. But that's not the game. The game is, why did we let them structure the rules that way? So they go through a variety of policies, trade policy, dollar policy, the Fed policy. You mentioned the book being available for free. Well, guess what? Copyright comes from the government. That wasn't God. Governments arrest you if you download work that is copyrighted without the owner of the copyright's permission. That's government. That's not the market. So I go through and show how in area after area after area, we've structured government policy to redistribute income from the vast majority, the 99%, to the 1%. I'm saying that should be the focus of progressives. We should focus on how we structure the market. That has to be our primary focus. I'm all for, taxing Mitt Romney and the other wealthy people more. That's fine. That's a good thing to do. But the main thing is that they got really rich because we structured the market so it would end up that way.
That's the difficulty, and I know that folks listening to us in Northern Arizona, many of them are hurting. They've seen their wages stagnate, and they don't understand why this happened. And in fact, we were talking to sociologist Lynn Kinworthy. They didn't really see it coming because women went into the workforce, because there's been a housing bubble. Can you show us a good example of how things are structured so that the system is not fair to most of the American people? How the system works, an example.
Well, one of the easiest ones is just the Wall Street banks. You know, here are these guys that, you know, literally stuffed their pockets full of money during the housing bubble. They're issuing mortgage-backed securities based on subprime mortgages, many of which were issued fraudulently, and they either knew it or made a point of not knowing it because this is going on a massive scale. So you'd have to believe the people at, you know, the investment banks, places like Merrill Lynch, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, you'd have to think they're morons. They didn't understand what they were packaging. You know, I had no clue. So they either knew it was fraudulent or they made a choice not to know. They made a fortune on that. The whole thing blows up. So you go, okay, well, you believe in the market. What happens when your business goes under because, you know, it turns out you're stuck with bad assets? Well, you're supposed to go out of business. No, that didn't happen. Government bailed them out. You know, we gave them money through the TARP, through the Fed. We kept them in business. These people, for the most part, they still have their jobs. They still have all this money they made. That's not the market. That was the government. You know, so that's the sort of situation we face. People out of Arizona, you know, if they have a small business and, you know, people aren't coming through the door, or, you know, they can't make a profit, they go out of business. That wasn't the case for the Wall Street guys.
Tell us about, you've written extensively on the housing bubble. Have you got any ideas on the future of construction and housing? I mean, obviously, it's a big deal in Arizona.
Yeah, well, I think we still have a ways left to go in terms of when we start seeing any sort of pickup in construction. We have a lot of excess supply. I mean, during the boom years, 2002 to 2006, we're building housing at just a ridiculous rate, and we still have an enormous oversupply of housing in many parts of the country. I suspect in Arizona being one of them, because that was kind of the center of the bubble. Prices went through the ceiling, and now I know they've gone through the floor, and Tucson prices are back to where they were in the early 90s, I think it was. So you've really seen a collapse there. And unfortunately, I don't see that turning around anytime soon. I mean, you might have hit bottom in the sense that I wouldn't expect prices to go lower in a place like Tucson or Phoenix. You know, so I wouldn't expect to see that. But in terms of, you know, any sort of new building, you know, apart from sort of an isolated home or project here and there, I don't see that happening. You know, certainly not this year, not next year. Maybe you'll start to see some pickup by 2014.
Wow. Yeah. One of your more controversial positions, I was going to avoid this because you know where we are and the kind of audience we believe we have. But one of your positions is not allowing drug companies to have a copyright or a trademark. Not trademark, but patents.
Yeah, well, the argument here is, you know, I'd be willing to give them a patent. What I want to do is instead, you know, set up an alternative mechanism where the government would finance research, which we already do. I mean, people say, you want the government to, well, we already spend $30 billion a year on research, so you're a little late if you object to that. You should already be yelling about it because it's going on without me, but we spend $30 billion a year in biomedical research, the National Institutes of Health. I'd like to see us spend more, fund the research publicly. It can be done by private companies. I mean, that's fine. You know, contract it out. That's how I would do it. I wouldn't have the government do it. But, you know, you pay for the research up front and then have all the drugs sold in the free market. And, you know, you can buy a lot of generics at chain drugstores for $5 a prescription. The drugs that cost you $500 or sometimes $5,000 prescription, they're no different. They're not chemically different than the drugs that you get for $5. The only difference is that Pfizer or Merck or whoever it might be has a monopoly on it. They have a patent monopoly given by the government. So rather than finance the research through the patent system, which is really antiquated and really bad for a long list of reasons I can go on for hours, why don't we just pay for it up front and then put it all in the public domain? We'll get better research, better drugs, and we won't have to worry about this stuff. You know, we have the prescription drug benefit for seniors, a big issue because they're so expensive. Well, if drugs were $5 a prescription, the vast majority of people, I know for really poor people, even $5 is a lot of money, but the vast majority of people, they wouldn't be worried about it. It wouldn't be a big issue, and that's the way it should be.
Maybe stepping out of economics for a minute, and if you're not comfortable with this, that's fine. But we got Obama, we got Barack, we got Mitt, and we got Newt. Forgetting the sound of their names, Mitt, you know, admits to hiding money offshore, paying 13%.
Perfectly legally.
Perfectly legally.
It's legal, yeah. Cayman Islands, great place to visit and store your money.
I imagine. I can't wait. Newt is talking about his 31%.
Switzerland is nice, too, Mike.
And even in his State of the Union speech, Barack talked about us. I mean, he put himself in that same category, which I don't. It clearly is not. But talk about their own personal economics, if you would, for a moment.
Well, they are in a different class than the rest of us. And, you know, Barack Obama certainly didn't come from a wealthy background, but he's certainly among very wealthy people now. And I have to say, I don't know about his personal finances at the moment, but I don't think there's any doubt, you know, when he leaves the White House, whether that's, you know, 2013 or 2017, he's going to have any number of offers that are going to give him millions and millions of dollars. He is very much of that class at this point. Now, I'll just tell you something that really drove this home for me a few years back. When President Clinton left the White House, he was asked what he was going to do. I forget the exact context. And he said, well, I have to, you know, earn some money to make my family financially secure. Well, and you go, you know, the pension of a former president is like $200,000 or $300,000 a year. Of course, his wife is also working as a senator, getting $150,000 a year, and his daughter was already grown and had at that point, I think she already had an MBA. So it's not as though he had to worry about supporting her. So you just go, what are you saying when you don't think you're financially secure with that sort of income and asset? I mean, it really just spoke volumes for, you know, the mindset of these people. And again, Bill Clinton wasn't raised from a wealthy background, but these were the people he hung out among. So, you know, getting $450,000 a year from, you know, salary and pension, that's not financially secure in his world.
Yeah, well, Bill Clinton, to his credit, has done a tremendous amount of a charity work of all kinds.
It's not useful work. It's a more complex issue than that. I'm simply making the point that he's obviously in a very, I don't know your personal financial situation, but I'm sure if you were in line to get a $250,000 a year pension, you wouldn't be worried about being financially secure.
I lived in New York City for a while, and I did meet enough of the folks, and they were giddily, happily back a few years ago. They were just having a great old time. And the when you have that much money all the time, people get spoiled. And so you see, whether it's Wall Street bankers or it's Mitt Romney, it kind of creeps out in their behavior a lot of times. And the feeling of, you know, of entitlement, it does build in. You have to be a strong person not to get infected with that, and also the sense of being spoiled, and a lot of the thing that strikes me about the very rich was they were very, very nice and very, very polite, and also mostly pretty spoiled.
Harriet Ward Beecher said to imagine to be rich and not behave like other rich people do would be like expecting to be able to drink all day and stay sober.
Yeah, no, I think it's something like that. You know, and obviously, you know, I'm referring to Clinton a moment ago. I mean, he'd go out, hang out on Martha's Vineyard where, you know, you get a nice house there. I'm sure you're talking $8-10 million, something like that, maybe more, I don't know. But he couldn't afford that, that's for sure. So if that's your reference point, then yeah, he wasn't financially secure when he left the White House.
We're almost out of time, Dr. Baker. What can you add? Help us here in Sedona, Arizona. Tell us where we're going. Look in your crystal ball.
Well, unfortunately, the near-midterm prospects are, to my mind, really, really bad. And one of the things that gets me more angry than anything is when people start treating that as though it's acceptable. So, you know, we got job growth numbers from December that we're creating 200,000 jobs a month. Well, at that rate, it wouldn't be until around 2020 till we get back to full employment. That's not acceptable. And they could always say it could be worse. Of course, it could always be worse. But telling us that, you know, we're going to have, you know, millions of people out of work because our folks in Washington messed up with economic policy till 2020, that shouldn't be acceptable. So the baseline where we stand now is a really, really bad path. And, you know, unless we turn that around, a lot of people are going to be suffering needlessly.
Yeah, our standards have gone down. We appreciate you talking with us and advise folks. You can find out more about Dean Baker's writing and work at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. It's on the internet, and you can listen to this broadcast, listen to the podcast again if you want, on our website at vvid.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats. And they sponsor Democratic Perspective. We hope you'll stay with us next week. We have a really good show planned. I think it's just going to be Mike and I. Maybe we'll talk about lobbyists and the amount of lobbying going on
right.
In Washington. Think so? Yeah. Thank you very much, folks. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.